In other cultures, you may find names that there is no specific meaning for them.
Okay.
So people are called by specific names. When you ask, what is the meaning of your name? They say, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And every day, sometimes you are being called by that name. And the point is that when the name is meaningful, it may on and off remind the person of the meaning of his own name. And to think about what my name means, this is kind of, in psychology, they call it inculcation. And
yes.
So when you are being called by a name, so unknowingly it will have such an impact on you that you try to be representative of that name.
Yes.
So a good name means that you feel responsibility to apply that name in your life. And because of that, it is of vital importance to pay attention to the concept of the names we give to the children. So the names that are of no meaning, the names with no meaning can make the person of a character without any specific humanitarian concept, a person with a vague character, a person with no responsibility. Of course, this is not necessarily, this doesn't mean that anyone who has such a name will be such a person,
yes.
But these are all the elements together that can influence the character of a person. So to some extent, I mean, psychologically, it is proven that when you call a person by a negative or positive name, you will see the impact.
Yes.
If you call a person by a bad term,
yes,
even if that's not the name of the person, so
yes,
you will see that after a while, the person will start reacting to it, positive or negative.
Uh-huh.
So the same way, when the name has a positive meaning, there will be positive reaction.
Yes.
No meaning, so the name will be meaningless. It is likely to make the man...
And by positive, you mean selecting a name that's meant to be good.
I mean just religious name,
yes,
a name with a
positive
content in it. For example, when you call a person Hassan, Hassan means a person who is nice in the behavior and the appearance.
Yes.
So when you are called by such a name, as I said, psychologically, a person may feel responsible to behave that way. So, of course, I said this is not necessarily 100%. This is not cause and effect.
Yes.
So, but these are the things that pave the way for the person to behave good. So when you call a person Muhammad, means the admired one.
Yes.
So this gives dignity and respect to person.
Yes.
I remember in Africa, in different countries, I saw that one of the things that the colonialists, they did,
yes,
was that they used to give ugly names to their slaves.
Yes.
So a person was...
To degrade them, that's right.
Belittle them, when a person is belittled, he will better accept humiliation and living as a slave.
The saddest story, especially in the United States of America, was this slavery that took place, especially towards the colored people, especially the black ones. You know, their first name and the family name, their surname, was wiped out, and then... the lord of the land or something, or the lady of the land used to give them some names that, as you said, in order to belittle
them. Usually they were the names of the objects that they had around.
Animals, objects.
Animals or the other objects. For example, I saw two brothers. They were called petrol and diesel.
Yeah.
See, you're dark, so you're petrol. You're diesel. So when a person is called by such a name, you will better control them. So it means that you cannot give a dignitary name to a person and then try to degrade them.
Yes.
So, and this is what Quran talks, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talks about the strategy of Fir'aun in belittling people to control them as their slaves. So the question might be that why people used to worship Fir'aun? Allah says, فَاسْتَخَفَّ قَوْمَهُ فَأَطَعُوهُ. Fir'aun, the Pharaoh, used to do istighfaf, humiliating, empty them from any dignity and respect inside. Then they were very prone to worship Pharaoh.
Yes.
So naming is from very important from that perspective.
Yes.
And we see that in our hadith, it is mentioned one of the duties of the parents and one of the rights
yes.
of the children to be called by good names.
IRIB English Radio presents questions and answers on Islamic beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Sometimes the people, the Muslims, select the names of prophets or infallible imams for their children. And in the future, that child or that person might not be a good person. He might be a criminal. He might be, an oppressor or something like that. Doesn't it make that name, for example, belittled or, it's better to say, degraded among the Muslims and among the communities all across the world?
If you want to look at it from that perspective, actually, it is the responsibility of the person who is called by the name to take care of the name and the respect and the dignity of name. Of course, we know that if somebody with a specific name is going to misbehave, it has nothing to do with the person who was this person is called after.
Okay.
So that this is first. But second is if there is any duty, there is the duty of the person who is carrying the name to behave nice. So we cannot abandon calling people with nice names just being afraid that they might behave negative or wrongfully in the future. We said that in order to help a person to behave in a right way, there are a bunch of elements needed.
Yes.
One of them is a good environment, good education, nice behavior from the parents and society. And one of them that the parents can do is a good naming. So a good name, it can be one element among the many
yes.
who can give a good character to a person
yes.
altogether.
Okay.
Yeah, of course, if somebody is going to misbehave later on with a good name, of course, I said people know that this has nothing to do with the person who is called first. But anyhow, if there is any blame, the blame is on the person, not on the person who called. That guy was
okay.
such a nice name.
Yes.
But this is how the human life is.
Yes.
We people are free. They have the free will, and they behave according to what they decide.
Yes.
So we cannot control people,
yes.
but we have to do the right thing. So parents calling people and the children by a nice name. And another point here is that, again, it's good you mentioned the point here. Sometimes we see people who are converts.
Uh-huh.
And the converts sometimes they feel responsibility to choose an Islamic Arabic name.
Yes.
This is wrong. I want to explain this to people that when you convert to Islam, you don't need to necessarily have an Arabic name.
Okay.
There was a guy in Africa again that he was chosen. His name was chosen by the Christian mother. Meaning in African language, I don't recall the name, meaning the worshipper of God.
Uh-huh.
So later on, the guy converted to Islam and he chose the name Junaid. Junaid means
yes.
the small army man.
Yes.
Jundi is the
yes,
soldier, and Junaid means a small soldier,
yes.
tiny soldier. And the mother, the Christian mother, was so oppressed and disappointed that I gave you such a nice name, worshiper of God, and the new religion made you a small, tiny soldier. So even the naming itself was to make give such a feeling, wrong feeling to the mother.
Or it's better, say, Sheikh, to say that at least choose a nice name for yourself.
Two points. One, to choose a nice name if somebody wants to choose a name. And second, you don't need necessarily to change your name. You know, sometimes they feel it's a must that they have to choose the name, to change the name. Of course, we said it's good to have a nice name, but this
is
not
Islamic name.
But this is not necessarily, I mean, to make it an Arabic or Islamic. Sometimes I said people's name is has a nice meaning in their own language. So why you should change it? So, and beside just making it a kind of a bad image of Islam, and the people living in the around that person in the neighboring, they may feel that if I want to also convert to Islam, I have to change all my identity, all my culture, and whatever is around me, and I like it. So I don't think even about changing my faith and converting to Islam.
So, according to the statistics given by the Civil Status Registry, you know, office. In most of the Muslim lands, the name of Fatima is selected for the girls, Muhammad and Ali for the boys, okay? This shows the interest of the people to their dignitaries, I mean, to their outstanding figures of Islam all across the world. At the same time, you know, the meaning is good too.
Yeah, son.
Okay. But again, there have been some people, for example, at the early Islam, for example, to select the names that were not good, for example, naming a child like an animal or something, okay? So this is not at all recommended in Islam.
No, I thought that was the culture of Arab usually. Yes. In that culture that they were in constant wars, usually they used to name the names of wild animals, like the leopard, lion,
and calb, for example, the dog or something like
for,
that.
For their, for the children,
these are not good
then,
at all. That's right.
Yeah, they will be brave people when they are grown.
Yes.
So calling a person Namur or Asad or things like this, they wanted to make them Fahad, the leopard, the tiger, in order to make them brave people. Even with that, Islam didn't fight against it. So you see that the approach of the Prophet is very smooth. And in that culture, the change was done gradually. And the point is that the Prophet didn't fight the culture of the people, even though it wasn't maybe admired. You see that the Prophet didn't call his own children by such names. And so by his positive, active, you know, behavior and conduct, he tried to give them the right role model and the lifestyle as a Muslim person. These are important lessons that we shouldn't expect radical changes in the societies and in the people when they convert to Islam, and we have to observe all those elements existing in the different cultures and respect them. Of course, Islamic, the pillars of Islam, the main rules and obligations of Islam are very clear.
That's right.
You have to be very serious with them. But there are things that are not that much of that level of importance. So it is of vital significance to give the right order of things in the pyramid of priorities in order to be a moderate Muslim.
Yes.
Meaning that sometimes just for a name we shouldn't sacrifice much more important things.
Okay, that's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Al-Mahmadi, for a nice elaboration on the topic selecting a good name for our children according to Islamic beliefs and Islamic recommendations. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanillah. لعلي وحسين وحسن
الآن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
The Jeffrey Epstein sex scandal has once again captivated the world's attention, revealing a web of alleged sexual exploitation and abuse involving numerous high-profile individuals, including politicians, businessmen, and celebrities. Jeffrey Epstein, a wealthy financier and convicted sex offender, was arrested in 2019 on federal charges of sex trafficking minors. Epstein allegedly committed the crimes at his Manhattan and Palm Beach, Florida properties, where he abused dozens of underage girls, some as young as 14, and conspired to commit sex trafficking, according to prosecutors. Epstein was found dead in his cell at a federal jail in Manhattan, New York, in August 2019, while he awaited trial on sex trafficking charges. The death was ruled a suicide. Ghislaine Maxwell, his accomplice, is currently serving a 20-year sentence for helping Jeffrey Epstein recruit and groom underage girls. The case gained significant attention due to Epstein's connections to numerous influential figures. Epstein's alleged sex trafficking ring was said to have operated for years, exploiting vulnerable young girls for the pleasure of his wealthy and powerful associates. Documents recently disclosed by the order of the U.S. District Judge Loretta Preska have shed light on the extent of this scandal, mentioning the names of high-profile figures. 19 unsealed documents totaling more than 1,300 pages are part of a civil defamation suit filed by Virginia Giuffre, who alleged that Epstein sexually abused her as a minor. She also accused Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein's former girlfriend, of playing a role in facilitating sex trafficking of minors and pedophilia. Separately, Giuffre also claimed in an email that former President Bill Clinton threatened Vanity Fair magazine not to publish sex trafficking articles related to Epstein. Sarah Ransom is one of the other victims of Epstein's sex trafficking ring who have broken their silence. Sarah Ransom claims that Epstein kept sex tapes involving prominent people. In emails sent to the court investigating Epstein's sex trafficking ring, Sarah Ransom alleges that the Duke of York, Prince Andrew of the UK, the ex-US President Bill Clinton, and the billionaire businessman Sir Richard Branson were filmed by Epstein. According to Sarah Ransom, a Jeffrey Epstein survivor, when my friend had sexual intercourse with Clinton, Prince Andrew, and Richard Branson, sex tapes were in fact filmed on each separate occasion by Jeffrey. Thank God she managed to get a hold of some footage of the filmed sex tapes, which clearly identify the faces of Clinton, Prince Andrew, and Branson having sexual intercourse with her. Several other high-profile figures, including former U.S. Vice President Al Gore, actor Kevin Spacey, the late pop star Michael Jackson, magician David Copperfield, and former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, have also been mentioned in court documents. Among the allegations is the claim that Epstein worked for the Israeli intelligence agency Mossad. Speaking to RT International in 2020, former Israeli intelligence officer Ari Ben-Menash claimed that Maxwell's father, Robert Maxwell, and Epstein were Israeli agents.
Now, Jeffrey Epstein is dead. Now, Ghislaine Maxwell, there are reports she's in Paris. You maintain that it was your employer, Robert Maxwell, owner of the Daily Mirror. You say that he was an Israeli agent, and as was his daughter.
He was not my employer. I would like to correct that.
Okay.
We worked together with him.
And okay. You say that his daughter Ghislaine also, though, worked for Israel, and it was Robert Maxwell who introduced Jeffrey Epstein to Ghislaine Maxwell way before the 1990s, as mainstream media is reporting.
Correct. Mr. Epstein was introduced to Ms. Maxwell probably sometime in the 80s. And Mr. Maxwell also thought he might be introducing a fellow to date his daughter. He tried to do a favor to his daughter, to find her a shidduch, as they say in Hebrew, a match.
He asserted that all these scandals were orchestrated by the Mossad for intelligence gathering and blackmailing prominent figures.
Okay, and that didn't really quite work out. I suppose what the most alarming allegations that you've been making are that the entire Epstein operation was a honey trap operation to entrap politicians, policymakers, celebrities, people in the media eye, basically to become Israel's assets.
Correct. That it became basically an intelligence operation to entrap different politicians around the world.
The name of former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak has also been mentioned in the Epstein court documents. Further believes that former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak was aware of the events. Meanwhile, Alan Dershowitz, a well-known pro-Israel lawyer and Harvard Law School professor, has also been linked to Epstein through court documents and witness testimonies.
He has been heavily implicated. He's probably the most implicated throughout this entire trove of documents of the first batch of the 900 and some odd pages of these first court release documents. He's mentioned 137 times. Let's go over some of the things. And to be very clear, he was asked to have sex, or he had sex with underage girls. There were 8 times that he was implicated in crime throughout these documents.
Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu had reportedly planned to employ American advocate Alan Dershowitz's skills to defend Tel Aviv in the International Court of Justice, ICJ, against a case alleging genocide brought forth by South Africa. Dershowitz has vehemently denied any involvement in Epstein's illegal activities, and in turn, to defend himself, resorted to allegations that Palestinian resistance fighters raped Israeli women, fake accusations that even the Israeli officials withdrew back in October 2023. The Epstein court documents have already given rise to honey-trap speculations, suggesting the involvement of Mossad and pro-Israel lobbies in using Epstein's activities as a tool for political control. These claims suggest that Epstein's activities were part of a broader operation aimed at controlling American politicians in favor of Israel.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Islamic Upbringing, where we discuss different problems and issues parents might have concerning their children and teenagers. Well, in this program, our dear expert Sayyid Salman Naqavi is here with us, who is a faculty member of Al-Mustafa International University. Assalamu Alaikum, dear Sayyid.
Alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you for accepting our invitation, brother.
Yes, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
The pleasure is all ours. Today, we are going to have a question and the way to communicate with our teenagers. Well, most parents have got a lot of difficulties to actually deal with their teenage children. The question is how to effectively communicate with our teenagers. The stage is yours.
Thank you very much. It is a very important question, and many people have problems and difficulties in being able to communicate with their children, especially teenagers.
That's right.
Because though we should have been able to inculcate in them something, issues, some morals and values and behavioral traits when they were younger, especially in the early 3 years of development, early child development, it's very important to be able to imbibe our children and groom our children in a way that when they grow up and become teenagers, they're not so difficult to deal with.
That's right.
But unfortunately, many of us are not capable of doing that. We're not competent enough to mm-hmm. become parents.
You're right.
We think that parenting comes naturally. Whereas we have to learn to become parents. We have to...
Require study.
Studies and learning. Mostly it is learning, not necessarily by reading books, even having discussions with people who know uh-huh. psychologists and who educate educators. They educate parents. They tell us how to become a good parent.
And maybe well-experienced people.
Yes, experienced people, elderly people who have good experience. We need to begin to learn how to become good parents. And because becoming a parent is not just being a parent in the sense that we just need to take care of their physical needs and their uh-huh. clothing. And most of the time we're thinking that how are we going to feed our children? We are going to give them proper food and clothing and shelter. That becomes the major concern. And we're not very much engaged with the issue that we need to teach them good behavior also.
And it's a psychological issue, actually.
Yes. Generally speaking, anything which relates to their behavior, and we have been expounding on this, that in many of our previous discussions, that we need to become good educators to become good parents. And we also need to be able to understand what traits and behavioral things which are necessary for teenagers. I mean, we need to groom them to become competent people. We need to groom them to become, when they become of age, 15, 18, and cross their teenager age, they need to be good, responsible people of society. Mm-hmm. So we need to make them competent. I believe that being competent is the same as being a salih person. A person who is, as is mentioned in the Quran, that basically it is faith and good deeds and actions and behavior and conduct based on taqwa, which is going to lead you to salvation in this world and the hereafter. And we need to teach our children to become good people, good competent human beings who are, whose behavior is based and rooted in faith in Allah Almighty. Mm-hmm. So therefore we need to be able to know what that it is, what the ideal behavior is, and then we need to be able to learn how to inculcate and imbibe that in our children. And the most important thing is to be able to communicate with them and to be able to tell them what we want them to become. But how to do that is important.
Okay, thank you, dear Sayed. I think the better way to actually discuss the question is that how to have a competent teenager.
Exactly. A person who is competent and effective in society.
Mm-hmm. So, dear audience, let's take a break and we'll be back very soon. Stay with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing with me, Mahdi, and Sayed Salman Naqavi. Today we're talking about how we can have a competent and effective teenager in the society. So at your service, brother.
Yes, thank you. So basically the goal is to groom our children to become good people, efficient and effective. That's what being a muhsin, as is mentioned in the Quran, muhsineen. Those who carry out good deeds and with excellence and competent, have taqwa, have faith in Allah Almighty. We're not talking about the general sense. Yes, good behavior, unfortunately, thought to be something which is different from having faith in Allah. No, it's a result of having faith in Allah.
Uh-huh.
So if we have faith in Allah, if we have taqwa, then we need to have good behavior, competent people.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to be able to learn how to become that, we need to communicate with them. So sometimes we see behavior which offends us, especially teenagers. Now, of course, we did say that early childhood development is important and that upbringing is very important. But still, when a person becomes a teenager, there are certain physical changes, hormonal changes, which are taking place in him or in her, which they cannot maybe understand what's happening. They're feeling changes in their physical bodies, in their hormones, in the way how they think and perceive the outside world. So these changes make them stressful. That makes them anxious. They're not allured and they're attracted by things which we do not think. For example, a girl would like to be makeup all the time.
That's
she has
right.
studies to take care of. She has to take care of other things, help her mother in chores maybe. And the mothers expect their children and their girls especially to help them in the household chores. And also learn how to become good wives maybe in the future. But a teenager girl or a boy has other interests. He is in a society, he's come into society, he has people, he has peers, she has peers, she wants to compete with them. And she,
maybe the way they look at the world is different.
Of course. I mean, they're experiencing new things, especially now that before that they did not have those hormonal changes in them. Now they're thinking of themselves, they think of their bodies, they think of how they look. And they want to attract others.
They want to stand out, actually.
Exactly. So now their behavior is much more tuned for this. And sometimes we're thinking something else. We think we don't comprehend maybe what they're thinking. They're thinking of something else, and we feel that they're, for example, ignoring us or they're disobeying us. No, they're in a different world altogether. They are thinking of other things. Mm-hmm. And we have though been through those years, and we have been through those stages ourselves, but we have forgotten what happened to us. So basically, we need to come back and understand, for example...
So they're not in the wrong way, actually.
No.
It's natural.
It is natural for them to be such. We have to realize that. So number one, if we want to be able to connect with them and communicate with them, we need to... Let's give an example. A girl is putting on makeup on herself, and she's wasting her time, in our opinion, in making up for herself, because in the evening she's going to meet her friend, and she wants to look good in front of her friends, for example. And we know, on the other hand, that this girl has to do her homework and to prepare herself for school tomorrow.
But this is our, actually, view.
Of course. So now there are two things we can do. We can either become furious and, you know, start
shout at them,
shout and yell at them and force them to do something what we want. Oh, go and study, sit down, don't waste your time, don't waste your energy. Now we need to, instead of being furious, we need to show that we're curious. We need to understand, make them understand that we realize, we understand what you're facing, a situation.
I should to sit beside them, not in front of them. Dear Sayed, let's take a break and we'll be right back and then continue our discussion. Your audience, stay with us.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, be like a friendly physician who applies medicine where it is useful.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. You're still listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, and Sayed Salman Naghavi is talking about how we can communicate effectively with our teenager. At your service, brother.
I think 3 or 4 points have to be taken care of. When we face the situation where we feel that the teenager is not doing what he or she is supposed to do, not just because we think so, because actually it's for her or him, his benefit. For example, the girl is, as I said, was taking up time in making up, putting on makeup and lipstick or whatever. Maybe it's allowed to do so. Maybe she's going out with her friend and she wants to look good. It's not bad, but it's wasting her time because she needs to do something more important. Now you need to, you become curious and try to understand what she's thinking, what she's feeling, and try to communicate to her that you understand what she wants, but maybe you need to make her realize yes, that is that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. You empathize with her, but still you have something. Don't you have something more important to do? Isn't are your studies okay? You don't need help there. Maybe you don't need to work on your, for example, dissertation that the school has given or whatever. Make her emphasize on her that she needs to do something which is more important. And if she doesn't, she will see the consequences. She will face the problems. If, for example, if she does not do her homework, the day after, the school teacher will ask her to sit behind school time and, you know, complete her homework. So she will have to face the consequences.
Yes.
But if you become furious and you want and you lose your calm because you need to remain calm, she doesn't feel that, oh, if I'm not going to do this, then my mother is going to face the consequences. It's her problem, not mine. So you need to make your teenager realize that she's going to be facing the problem. My mother is just empathizing with me and she wants to help me. She wants to assist me. She wants to be beside me to help me along this path. So you need to make them feel that the burden is upon her shoulder and she has to take it upon herself. And the mother or the father can only assist the child in getting over that problem.
Thank you, Sayed Salman Naghavi. It was a very fruitful discussion. And your audience to have a competent teenager and have an effective interaction with him or her, as Sayyid Salman Naqvi said, we are supposed to sit by them, not in front of them, and look at the world through their view. And in order to correct their things that we think is problematic, we are supposed to show him or her the consequences of his job. And this way, we are going to be a person who is going to help them, not the one who is going to shout at them. The audience, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram, typing Call of Islam Radio. Well, until another episode, have a nice time and goodbye.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
Allah, 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 Allah.
اون چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند، ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن می‌کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of Spring truth. Of
Allahu ya Allah, subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah, walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah, wallahu akbar.
The foreign power and local agent have gone to mind their own business. The corrupt and the corruptors, and God willing, they will also not be able to raise their heads later on. Let them utter whatever they want to us. Their utterances are not important. Foreigners' utterances are not important. Therefore, what is necessary is that we be the servants of Islam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. This is the Spring of the Truth, and I am Bita, the host of today's episode. And I have the pleasure to be here to actually analyze some ethical and practical points from the viewpoint of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. You ought to become illuminating, to purge and purify yourselves, leave worldly desires out of yourselves. All mistakes and wrongdoings stem from attachment to the world, come to true and eternal life through divine life. As we say, nowadays we are so attached to this materialistic world because we are actually leveled by these materialistic things like money, like social status, like the job you have, and so many other characteristics and criteria that we are dealing with and struggling with nowadays, which is standardizing the humanity into materialistic form. It will lead every human being and every individual towards individualism and excessive attachment to this world, which will lead us to be some selfish and so far from humanity human beings.
صلي على طه النبي
is, unfortunately, the present world is dominated with a materialistic worldview, so it is very difficult to have a spiritual life in a time when minds are polluted and hearts are sinned, and reasoning and judgment are affected with worldly diseases. Nevertheless, when a person gives the willpower its due and tries to get rid of such influences as much as possible, he can reach a life in the dimensions of heart and spirit. Negative elements in the world are a test for human beings, and only real believers who have a strong willpower can pass it. Every day, people witness many negative scenes which trigger wrongdoing and sinning in their nature. If such feelings are not controlled by willpower, a person may end up in absence thoughts, ugly memories, and slippery grounds. God warns believers against satanic feelings. Those who keep from disobedience to God in reverence for Him and piety, when a suggestion from Satan touches them, they are alert and remember God, and they have clear discernment. Whereas their brothers, the brothers of the Satans in the form of human beings, Satans draw them deeper into error and do not give over relaxing. So as we see, we are living in a world full of desires, full of satanic desires, that we have to take control over all of these obstacles in order to pave the way to the destination of satisfaction of Allah Almighty.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Paragon of patience. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Condolences to you all on a poignant occasion. Since today, the 15th of Rajab, is the anniversary of the martyrdom of a very venerable lady who nursed back Islam and humanitarian values to life. Stay tuned to listen to a special feature on the heroine of Karbala, Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, the granddaughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Whoever cries on the sufferings of this girl is like the one cried for the sufferings of her two brothers, Hassan and Hussein, peace upon them. These words were expressed by the Prophet on the birth of his granddaughter, Zainab, peace upon her, whose martyrdom anniversary we commemorate every year on the 15th of Rajab. It is said that after naming her, he took her in his arms, pressed his cheek to her cheek, and cried incessantly until his beard was soaked with tears. Asked by his daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, the reason for his grief, he said, "Gabriel has just informed me that after you, she will suffer from great afflictions." Hazrat Zahra, peace upon her, cried as well, along with her husband, Imam Ali, peace upon him, and had inquired her father about the divine reward for those who would shed tears for her daughter's sufferings. The heroine of Karbala needs no introduction. Her saga is eternal. Till the end of the world, wherever the heart-rending tragedy of Karbala is commemorated, and whenever the name of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, is mentioned, his sister's name will be there as well. It was Zainab, peace upon her, who with patience carried the battle to the enemy's camp, and through her eloquent sermons in the courts of the tyrants in Kufa and Damascus, shook the foundations of the Umayyad regime. By holding the life-inspiring mourning ceremonies, she universalized and immortalized the message of the martyr of Karbala. She was a paragon of patience who endured the most tragic events in the history of mankind with dignity and firm faith in the Lord Most High. The phrase that the Lord of the Age, the Prophet's 12th and last heir, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, has used in the famous Ziyarat-e-Nahiye for Imam Hussein, peace upon him, could also be applied for Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her. It reads, "Indeed, the angels of heaven wonder at your patience." Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, was undoubtedly the paragon of patience, and never for a moment did she ever show emotion or other negative traits. In accordance with the benefits of patience, as mentioned in the Noble Quran, over 70 ayahs, she exercised self-control in the midst of most menacing calamities. On the day of Ashura in Karbala, she gave permission to her two young sons, Aun and Muhammad, to march to the battlefield, and when, after a brave fight, the two achieved martyrdom, the aggrieved mother prostrated in thanks to God for having accepted her sacrifice. Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, like a true scion of the family of the prophets, Abraham and Ishmael, peace upon them, demonstrated to the world the practical meaning of patience throughout all those heart-rending scenes at Karbala when her dear brother, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, achieved martyrdom. When almost all male members of the household were gruesomely killed in front of her eyes, when the heads of martyrs were inhumanly mounted on lances, when the encampment was burned by enemy soldiers, when the orphans were mercilessly thrashed for crying, when her bedridden nephew, Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him, was flogged by the seemingly victorious hordes, and last but not the least, when the captives were deliberately taken past the unburied corpses of their dear ones, lying without shrouds under the hot and burning sun, never, for instance, did her feet falter. It was thus the sister's patience that made the message of the brother resound with glory in the courts of the perpetrators of history's greatest tragedy, and ensured that as long as the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, will be commemorated around the world, the name of Zainab, peace upon her, will also shine with radiance. Although the Prophet, his daughter, and the infallible imams of his blessed household were pictures of paramount patience and endured the greatest hardships for the sake of God, the patience of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, were rather unique. Never can history present an example of such a peerless pair of brother and sister, whose patience made Islam triumphant forever. It could be said that if the patience of the brother ended in Karbala with his tragic martyrdom on the afternoon of Ashura, the patience of the sister was put to more grueling test and had to pass through the ordeal of captivity, including dungeons, mockery by the captors, presentations at the courts of the tyrants in a humiliating manner, and moreover, the sight of the severed heads of the martyrs mounted on lances and paraded before the bereaved household. So vast was her knowledge that her nephew hailed her as a scholar that had not been taught by anyone. Her wisdom earned her, from her clan, the Bani Hashim, the epithet of Aqilatuna, or our wise lady. Her piety brought her the appellation of Az-Zahide, or the devout. Her appearance, gait, and even her rejection of a comfortable life in order to safeguard faith resembled that of her maternal grandfather, Hazrat Khadija, peace upon her, the Ummul Mu'mineen, or the mother of true believers. Her dedication to the cause of Islam and to confront the enemy in his own camp was reminiscent of her noble mother, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, whose famous sermon to mask hypocrisy she had witnessed as a five-year-old girl in the mosque of Medina to the usurpers of the right of political leadership of her father, Imam Ali, peace upon him. Her own eloquent sermons while in captivity evoked memories of her great father. Here is a passage from one of her famous sermons in Damascus. O Yazid, do you feel that you have made our life miserable and existence impossible? And you think that God has disgraced us and that you have been honored and elevated? This apparent success of yours is the result of grandeur of your might and lofty status for which you are proud. You feel that you have conquered the whole world and your affairs are organized and that our domain is now under your control? Wait, wait. Let not your ignorance make you so elated, for have you not heard God's words? Let not those who disbelieve think that our giving them respite is good for themselves. We only give respite to them so that they may increase in sins, and for them is a disgraceful punishment. Soon, Yazid and the Umayyads were cast into the dustbin of history. As for Zainab and the Prophet's household, her sprawling shrine in Damascus and the pilgrims that throng it day and night is proof indeed of the righteousness of Imam Hussein's cause. Finally, a few years after Karbala, the sister also achieved martyrdom. It is said that during the rule of the Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, because of famine in the Hejaz, Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, and her husband Abdullah ibn Ja'far Tayyar came to Syria, where in a place called Rawiye, on the outskirts of Damascus, the latter owned an orchard, said to be the property of her and her husband's paternal grandfather, Abu Talib, who had bought it during his frequent trade trips to Syria before the advent of Islam. It proved to be the last rendezvous of Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, who left the world on the 15th of Rajab, 65 AH, and was laid to rest in this place where now stands her magnificent shrine, revered by all as Sayyida Zainab, peace upon her. According to an account, it was the same orchard where she and the other captives had been interned for a while in the aftermath of Karbala before being taken to the Umayyad court, and where the severed head of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, had been hung from a tree by the accursed soldiers of Yazid. She sat under the tree, lamenting in remembrance of the gruesome.